A pleasant good morning wherever you are. Welcome to the 11th day of January 2020 broadcast of Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead. That's me, of course. We are coming to you with the miracle of modern technology and the magic of 21st century broadcasting through the renowned studios of Radio 1490 WGCH in Greenwich, Connecticut, USA. We're also streaming online to all four corners of the world through WGCH.com anywhere. We've got a great show for you today, so without any further ado, let's get started.
Coming up on today's show,
you may be surprised to learn that Montana has a rich, colorful historical connection with China and Chinese people. Disrupted by wars, rebellions, droughts, and famines in the 19th century, some Chinese who sought better opportunities in America came to Big Sky Country. Montana, of course. In today's broadcast, you'll hear an encore conversation I had with Mr. Pat Monday, the president of the Maihua Society in the city of Butte. Its mission is to document the history of Chinese people in the Rocky Mountains. This museum provides a fascinating insight into the lives of Chinese citizens in Butte and their contributions to the city and the prejudices that they experienced. It is housed in the Wang Chung Tai Building and Maihua Noodle Parlor Building at 17 West Mercury Street. You can learn more by going online to maihua.org. You're also going to get your first ever weekly dish of instant zen on this show. Well, what's that about? Well, you'll find out shortly. And as we count down to the Lunar New Year, we're going to transport you to one of the treasures of China. The Year of the Rat is coming ever closer. We'll have all this and more as the show unfolds. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these important messages.
This is Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead on Radio 1490 WGCH.com anywhere, and now on 105.5 FM, Stamford, Connecticut, USA. Contact me anytime by email at radioasiatoday@gmail.com. Learn more about the show at radioasiatoday.blogspot.com. Can't listen in real time? Well, we understand, and we've got you covered. All of our shows are freely available through the news blog on podcast.com, soundcloud.com, and the shows and hosts section of WGCH.com. You're invited to support the show in any amount through our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com. Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead broadcasts to the world every Saturday morning starting 10:30 a.m. Eastern USA time. As always, thank you for your interest and for listening. It's a new year. I'm inviting you to do something extraordinary. A new approach to modern health, created by nature, crafted by Modir. At Modir, they believe you deserve safe, effective, and clean products you can use daily. Modir is committed to helping you reduce, even eliminate your exposure to controversial chemicals so you and your family can enjoy a safe, healthy home environment. Do you know I use Modir's award-winning Super Nutraceutical Liquid BioCell featuring its patented collagen AA matrix? It's true. Say yes to Modir. I did, and I love it. Learn more at modir.com. That's spelled modere.com. Call Rosalind at 808-394-5694. Again, that's Rosalind at 808-394-5694. Or call me at 808-721-0306. That's 808-721-0306.
Welcome to Conversations with Jeffrey Bingham Mead, your host.
You may be surprised to learn that Montana has a rich, colorful history with China and with Chinese people. Disrupted by wars, rebellions, droughts, and famines, it's no wonder that many Chinese sought out better opportunities in a place like Montana. But life was not easy, and not by any means. Now, with me by phone from Butte, Montana, is Pat Monday. He is the president of the Maihua Society. Pat, welcome to the show. Tell us about yourself.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks very much for hosting this. Well, I grew up back east in the Alleghenies and moved to Montana to teach college here about 30 years ago, president of Butte's Maywa Society. And I have a strong interest in China. I've taught at three universities there, and I have some Chinese colleagues and friends, and currently doing some writing and researching on Chinese and Chinese-American culture.
Tell us about the Maywa Society in Butte, Montana.
The Maywa Society was established as a 501c3 in the early 1990s when the 501c3 board took over ownership of the buildings from the families that had historically owned and operated the businesses. There are two historic buildings. They're joined together. Hua Chong Tai was built in 1899 with the ground floor as a mercantile and then a small noodle parlor upstairs. The Chin family did so well on this first business that they more than doubled their real estate, built a second much larger building, the Maywa, in 1909. They expanded the noodle parlor to cover the whole upstairs. This then provided them living quarters for the family. They eventually went on to raise 10 kids there. They rented out small spaces to other Chinese merchants, so the building was sort of the, you know, the mall, the shopping mall of its day. And they also operated a sort of a rooming house for some single Chinese men. We tell a rather unique story. We tell the story of a middle-class merchant Chinese-American family. The usual story you get of the Chinese on the Western frontier is that they're railroad laborers or placer miners or lumberjacks. But we tell this middle-class story, and we have this fantastic collection, including the original merchandise from the Hua Chong Tai when it closed up in 1942, a full collection of the original and some very rare herbal remedies, lots of clothing, including outstanding collection of almost two dozen Qiong Sam or Chapao dresses from the 1930s. And we have lots of business and household furnishings. Just a few artifacts I'd point out is my favorites there. We have this marvelous hand-carved, hand-painted Happy Buddha, about 4 feet tall, welcoming statue from the 1870s that originally welcomed patrons to another Chinese restaurant in Butte. We have the Chin family's Guan Yu, again, hand-painted, beautifully hand-carved statue as a sort of house god. And we also have the family tea set with a very famous poem by Zhang Zhi, or Yi Sun, as his name was also known, from the Tang Dynasty. We host several community events every year, including a Chinese New Year parade and a tomb sweeping day ceremony. Close touch with the Chin family.
From where in China, when and why did the Chinese come to Montana, and what was life like for them?
That's a complicated story, and it depends a lot where you are. But virtually all of the almost 300,000 Chinese who came to the American West in the 19th century came from a very small region of Southeast China, the Pearl River Delta of historic Canton, now Guangzhou. And even within the Pearl River Delta, almost all of them came from just a few rural counties. These business families that came, in addition to the single young men who were laborers, these business families, like the Chins, were very international, or we would say today transnational. They own property in both China and the U.S. Many of these families also built retirement homes in their home villages in China, planning to go back there and turn over their American businesses to their children. At the peak, around 1880, there were about 2,000 Chinese in Butte, perhaps more. Elsewhere in the West, the Chinese suffered really extreme racism and prejudice. And all these historic massacres that occurred in Rock Springs, Wyoming, just south of here, in San Francisco, California, in Walla Walla, Washington, all of these really, really terrible events. Now, in Butte, there was certainly some discrimination and prejudice. Nobody wants to sugarcoat that. Mm-hmm. However, in Butte, no Chinese were dragged out of their houses and murdered, but no Chinese businesses were burned down in Butte, and no Chinese were dragged out of their houses and murdered. Butte was kind of a special place. It was a city of immigrants from all over the world, and the Chins and a number of other Chinese merchants and doctors were very successful here. Their children attended unsegregated public schools, unlike, you know, for example, California, where the segregation continued, I think, at least through the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And still there were problems. So there was probably the most central event was an 1895-1896 boycott of Chinese businesses that was organized by white labor union. But the Chinese challenged this in court. And I should say the people of Butte never stopped patronizing the Chinese businesses anyway. But the business community challenged this in court. It was declared an illegal boycott, and the white unions had to cease and desist.
Share with us some of the highlights and prominent personalities from Montana's Chinese community.
In addition to the Chins, there were about a dozen or more really prominent Chinese families in Butte. Now, because of the Tongs and family rivalries, they didn't always get along, so there were some pretty sharp divisions. But among the restaurant owners, the Hum and the Tam family is especially notable. They started with a mercantile and then established the Peking Noodle Parlor in 1911. Mm-hmm. Restaurant on the upper floor, gambling house on the ground floor. The Peking Noodle Parlor, the gambling house, is not in operation, but the restaurant is still in operation on the top floor, and it's still owned and operated by the Tam family.
Wow.
And then sort of connections to the Hum family. Rose Hum, who first married name was Lee, Rose Hum Lee, took her Ph.D. in sociology from the University of Chicago in the 1940s, and she went on to become the first female, let alone Chinese, sociology department head in the United States. Mm. And I highly recommend her book, The Chinese in the United States of America, 1960. And she's got a lot of other really excellent publications as well that give you tremendous insights into the life and the social development of Chinese communities in the West. Among the various Chinese doctors that were practicing in Butte, Dr. Hui Pak, P-O-C-K, was probably the most notable. He was very popular with both Asian and white patients. He had two separate offices because of prejudices at the time. White patients didn't want to share the waiting room with Asian clients. In the early 1900s, he cured a wealthy mine owner's daughter of ulcer. That other doctor told her she was incurable, she was just going to die or bleed to death, and that really cemented his reputation. And then during the 1918 influenza epidemic, which hit Montana and Butte really hard, Dr. Hui Pak's traditional herbal remedies proved far more effective than Western medicine. I mean, Western medicine, you know, still practically using leeches at that time.
Oh, my.
And Pak used a lot of herbals that are recognized today as, you know, serious medical treatments. Pak also owned a mercantile, and he was one of those leaders in the anti-boycott court case.
Now, we're going to take a short break. My guest today on Conversations is Pat Munday. He is the president of the Mewa Society in Butte, Montana.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these important messages.
This is Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead on Radio 1490 WGCH.com anywhere, and now on 105.5 FM, Stamford, Connecticut, USA. Contact me anytime by email at radioasiatoday@gmail.com. Learn more about the show at radioasiatoday.blogspot.com. Can't listen in real time? Well, we understand, and we've got you covered. All of our shows are freely available through the news blog on podcast. podcast.com, soundcloud.com, and the shows and hosts section of WGCH.com. You're invited to support the show in any amount through our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com. Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead broadcasts to the world every Saturday morning, starting 10:30 a.m. Eastern USA time. As always, thank you for your interest and for listening.
Welcome back to Conversation. I'm Brett Jeffrey Bingham Mead, your host. Coming to us today by phone from the heart of Montana's Big Sky Country is Pat Monday, the president of the Mehwah Society in Butte, Montana. Pat, welcome back. Now, talk to us about the impact of the Chinese Exclusion Act on the Chinese in Montana.
The 1882 Exclusion Act, of course, ended the immigration of Chinese laborers, all these young single men who had been coming to Montana, the land of opportunity. The Chinese immigrants that were already here were forbidden from becoming citizens. Many of them, probably about a third of the Chinese on the American Western frontier, returned to China throughout the 1880s or so. But those who didn't were essentially stranded here. They could never become citizens, couldn't bring their family over, oftentimes knew very little, either spoken or written English. So from the 1930s to the 1950s, the Chin family provided quarters for a half dozen or so of these uncles, as the family called them. They were old Chinese men who could no longer work. They had no family. You know, they had no Social Security or other benefits. So the Chins really just gave them a place to live and took care of them. And then each morning and evening, the Chin daughters would bring meals from the restaurant upstairs down to the uncles. Mm-hmm. Now, the Exclusion Act had, of course, some exemptions for Chinese business families. You know, in America, money always talks, right? So even though it was an extremely harsh law on the working class Chinese, for the business classes, they could still travel back and forth to China, and they could bring their wives and children back from China to the United States. Now, the exemption wasn't easy, and so just coming and going, they had to go through really rigorous requirements, paperwork and interrogations and other things at Angel Island and at other ports of entry. But this exemption for the business classes fed the practice of what were called paper sons. So these businessmen would claim in American immigration documents that they had additional children in China that they didn't really have. And then they would sell these papers as an opportunity to other Chinese families to send their children, their sons, to America. The immigration officials at Angel Island and the other ports of entry were really tough on these family members that were immigrating. These young men were often detained for long periods. They were subjected to multiple interrogations. They had to provide all kinds of paperwork and letters of reference. And there was sort of a premise that all of the family immigrants were paper sons. And of course they weren't. It was a minority of the total number of family members that came over. But the real paper sons had to very carefully rehearse and memorize all the details of their upbringing. They might be asked, for example, details about what the family house or kitchen looked like, where the well was outside, what kind of fields or crops they grew, that kind of thing. So they had to be very convincing in these interrogations. Now, without the Exclusion Act, sort of playing a little bit of what-if history here, it's very likely that Chinese immigration would have continued after 1882 and right on through the development of the American Western frontier. Probably millions of Chinese would have come to the U.S. by the 1930s. And it's a huge lesson in American history. It's the only time, well, so far, that immigration laws have been directed at a single nationality.
Talk to us about the Vote Your Main Street campaign.
We qualified to be one of 20 historic sites nationwide in this competition. we went through a really rigorous application process to demonstrate that we had the capacity to manage a $150,000 grant for bricks and mortar work on the building. Now, luckily, we recently received another grant that had funded a complete architectural and engineering assessment of the building. So we could pull out line item by line item estimates from that assessment to our application to the Vote Your Main Street campaign. And it looks like we're going to finish in the top tier. My fingers are crossed here. I'm knocking on wood. And we should receive full funding. So I look forward to seeing all this work, a new roof, restored skylights, lots of brickwork to be done, new windows, and other really sorely needed restoration work.
Yeah, you'll have to stay in touch with me and let me know how that goes. We'll announce it to the audience, of course. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, as we close, what is the legacy of the early Chinese in Montana?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot because my friend, the writer Edwin Dobb, D-O-B-B, I'll put in a plug for Ed here, describes Butte as that little stage where the history of America played. And that's so true. Montana won statehood in 1889, thanks in part to two really major Chinese contributions. One, Chinese placer miners played a very significant role in the development of the gold fields in Montana in the 1860s and through the 1870s, and that brought territorial status to Montana. And then secondly, Chinese railroad workers helped lay the tracks that connected Montana Territory with the United States in the early 1880s, and that literally laid the foundations for statehood. Now, most small cities in the West, whether Helena, Montana, the capital here in this state, or places like Tacoma, Washington, they razed their Chinatowns, completely erased their Chinese legacy. And the Chinese became forgotten pioneers. That's not the case in Butte. Butte is a city that remembers its history and the diverse contributions of many ethnicities. And the Mewa serves as a historical classroom for many schools that make us part of their curriculum. And we also just serve as a reminder about the success of Asian immigrants and what I call, with no embarrassment at all, the American dream, because the Chins came here, overcame tremendous odds, as did these other Chinese merchant class families, in order to succeed, to raise kids, send them to college, you know, and join the great success, economic success, and cultural successes of American society. People come from all over Montana to participate in Butte's Chinese New Year festivities, and our parade is very participatory. The guests who come become part of the parade. The Peking Noodle Parlor here still serves up Chinese American food, and literally by eating at the Peking Noodle Parlor, you can perform history. You're dining in these authentic curtain booths. We're just like all the other Chinese restaurants from the early 1900 period.
Well, our guest today on Conversations has been Pat Munday. He is the president of the Mewa Society in Butte, Montana. You can learn more about the Mewa Society at Mewa, that's spelled MAIWHA.org. The Mewa Society of Butte, Montana collects and conserves artifacts, preserves historic buildings and sites, presents public exhibits, and supports research and publication of materials of scholarly general interest. I want to thank you, Pat Munday, very much for being with us today. Thank you so much, Shishe.
You bet. And thank you, Jeffrey, and all the great work you do with the radio station, the blog site, the Facebook posts. It's just tremendous effort and very appreciated.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm deeply honored. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for your weekly dish of instant zen.
Zen is an absolute state of centeredness that blends the intimate elements of body and mind into one. Zen is a way of being. Zen is a state of mind. Zen discards confusion, thus freeing you to see clearly without the fallacies devised by your own thoughts. Now, for untold centuries, Asian philosophers have graced classical civilization by encouraging us all to employ the arts of self-cultivation, love of learning, resulting in a high degree of civility. Here are this week's words of wisdom. In China, they say, quote, "The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now," unquote. A friend in Korea wrote to me to say, quote, "A gemstone cannot be polished without friction, nor man or woman perfected without trials," unquote. In Japan, I've heard it said that, quote, "fortune will always come into a house with laughter." Now, what does that mean? Well, sometimes we need to be reminded that keeping a sense of humor in life is important. So, no matter how grim things can seem, it always helps to laugh. A little perspective can often do a world of good, I should say, when skies are gray. And that concludes our weekly dish of instant Zen. Treasures of China is a celebration of dramatic contrasts, a unique blend of cultural journeys and far-flung destinations where a world of adventure awaits. Our journey today takes us to the Hall of Supreme Harmony in Beijing's magnificent Forbidden City. It is located in a powerful and influential position on the north-south main axis. The hall was first built in the year 1420. The Hall of Supreme Harmony was used to hold grand ceremonies by the 24 emperors in the Ming and Qing dynasties, such as the enthronement of the emperor, his wedding, and so on. The emperor would hold a large feast for officials on his birthday, New Year's Day, or winter solstice festival. The imperial exams for new scholars were held here during the early years of the Qing dynasty. No building in Beijing was allowed to be higher than it during the Ming and Qing dynasties because of its symbol of imperial power. The throne was placed on a 2-meter-high white jade dais in the center. It was adorned with gilt and engraved with patterns of clouds and 9 dragons. The grand throne was surrounded by the 6 huge golden pillars engraved with dragons representing the supreme dignities and power of the emperor. Behind the throne is a curved gilt screen. On either side, there are incense burners in the shape of the mythical unicorn, signifying the obedience of all other kingdoms. The gilded ceiling high above the throne features a sculpture of a twisting dragon playing with a huge pearl. In front of the hall is a huge white marble sculpture called Two Dragons Playing with a Pearl. The pearl is a symbol of good luck. The Hall of Supreme Harmony is not to be missed when you visit Beijing. You cannot appreciate its sheer size until you see it for yourself. Beautiful and majestic, this is truly one of the great treasures of China. Well, I sure hope you enjoyed that. You know, there are lots of treasures in China, but you know what? There are a lot of treasures in Japan and Korea and Singapore, Vietnam, you name it, it has it. And we're going to start featuring those in our future episodes. Now, before I go, I want you to tune in to next week's show. And the reason why is because I'm going to be featuring a lot of activities and things that are going to be going on regarding the Lunar New Year. And so please, if you want to send me some material about that, send it to radioasia@gmail.com. Well, with that said, thank you for tuning in to Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead, broadcasting to all four corners of the world from Radio 1490 WGCH in Greenwich, Connecticut, USA, and from WGCH.com anywhere via live global streaming over the internet. Learn more about us at radioasiatoday.blogspot.com. Contact me at radioasiatoday@gmail.com and sign up to be on our email list, too. Our shows are archived and freely available on podcast.com and SoundCloud and the shows and hosts section of WGCH.com. We thank our supporters, advertisers, and friends for making this show possible and invite you to do the same. As we like to say in Hawaii, ahoi ho kakou, which means until we meet again. I'll see you next Saturday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern USA time. Bye-bye now.